Welcome to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. Six-time national champion bodybuilder, one-on-one peak performance coaching specialist, Mass Machine Nutrition Supplement Company owner, and speaker, Skip LaCour offers his expert advice on training, nutrition, and motivation that will help you take your efforts to the next level. He also interviews the most interesting and passionate people in the bodybuilding and fitness world so you can learn from their knowledge and success too.
Hey everybody, it's Sean Ray here, and I am the special guest host of the Skip LaCour Bodybuilding Podcast. And as you might know, my special guest today is none other than the host himself, five-time natural Mr. Universe winner, motivational speaker, supplement owner, and my good friend Skip LaCour. Skip, welcome to your bodybuilding podcast.
Well, thanks, Sean. I tell you, as it's an honor having you. I've admired you for so long interviewing me. And I was thinking about is that, you know, I'm not on anybody's podcast. People don't invite me onto podcasts. I've done literally hundreds of them, and I've never been on somebody else's podcast, at least not in the bodybuilding and fitness world. In the motivational speaking world, they have me, but not in the bodybuilding world for whatever reason.
Let me tell you something, Skip. When you interviewed me the other day for this weekend's Legends seminar workshop taking place in Santa Clara in concert with the San Jose competition, I thought, you know what? You're very articulate. You're very good at asking all the right questions. You've had a good run of interviews with some of the legends, including Lee Haney and Flex and Chris Cormier and Rich Gaspari. You brought out a different side of myself in conversation, not just asking the same run-of-the-mill things, but I know you've always been a stickler for trying to get into the mindset and the mental focus of these athletes, what makes us tick.
Right.
Your interview technique, it goes beyond the realm of what, you know, we were used to as athletes, which is why it's a great thing you have your podcast. But that being said, there's a lot that's behind you as well. And you've made a living and a lifestyle out of your passion on a level that many athletes could never do. In terms of having your fingerprints on a lot of different projects and rubbing elbows and shoulders with some of the greatest in the sport of bodybuilding. And yet, you know, your accomplishments are not without recognition. What you've done on that bodybuilding stage with what you had to work with is nothing short of amazing. And I'll toot your own horn for you because I know you weren't on the grand stage in terms of the Olympia and under the spotlight some of the other notable bodybuilders, but again, you walked in a world that very few bodybuilders can do on a natural level and do it at the level that you did it in. So there's a certain discipline, number one, to train the way that you do and maintain the size and develop the muscle that you did, but also be victorious year after year after year. Not to say you didn't have some defeats, but those defeats made you come back and win. Tell your listeners a little bit about the restraint it must have taken you to not go ahead and drop the bomb and try to become the next Lee Haney, Arnold Schwarzenegger, per se, without having any restrictions. It took a lot of self-restraint to say, you know what, this is an area of bodybuilding I'm not going to go into. I'm just going to make the best out of what God gave me.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting how I see the whole grand scheme of things now is much different than I saw back then. And let me tell you why, is that back in our day, there was just the magazines, right? And you know what it's like. I think that when the fans see you, right, and then they see in the magazines, they can't really conceptualize the detail and how you're just such a unique physical specimen. When you see a professional bodybuilder in person, it's even more amazing than the magazines. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so, you know, sometimes when you look in the magazines, you don't really have a concept of how elite your physiques are. And I was the same way. And to tell the truth, Sean, I got to tell you, my second show that I ever went to, I said, I want to be a bodybuilder, right? And it was the San Jose show, and it was way back in like 1989, 1990. You were a guest poser with Vince Taylor and Lee Labrada. It was a big love production, and it was one of my first exposures to bodybuilding. And I followed you into the bathroom, right? I had been training for like about maybe 6 months at the time. And I followed you in the bathroom, and I was, and you probably see, I don't know how much you notice, I bet this happens to you all the time, but I went to the urinal right next to you, and I was sizing myself up next to you, and not penis, right? I guess that sounds bad, but physique-wise. Now, remember, I mean, I had a good start, a good build, but I mean, I had been training for 6 months, but in my mind, I was like not that far off from you. You were fully clothed, right? So yeah, I had no concept. So there was a certain being naive to the level of development, right? And that was a good thing. That was a good thing because I thought natural and everything, I'm comparable to those guys, you know, they're taking drugs. And here's another thing. I started when I was 27. So, you know, I know the history of some of you legends, and, you know, you were almost like from teenagers, you're grilled with a certain mentality. I went into my regular life managing a grocery store, things like that. It would have been a little bit different for me to go into that at 27. This was my thinking at the time. And I didn't know about the big, giant difference. And so at that time, there were AAU shows, and there were smaller shows. There were drug-tested shows. So I did well right from the beginning. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to be honest. As I've had time to take a step back, if there was social media, it isn't until now, not only, like I use the metaphor, like you can't grasp your extreme, unique, elite development of pros, even from the magazines, I couldn't see how worldwide popular and your influence and your raving fans were at that time. I'll tell you this, Sean, if I would have known that you guys had such an amazing following and you got to do what you love to do, I got to do what I love to do. But like you said, I was a big fish in a very teeny weeny pond, right? And now through social media, it's like I'm just seeing the impact you guys have. You know, I mean, I don't want to be a negative influence to those who are training drug-free if they really admire what I've done. But part of it was being naive. I mean, I missed out on literally hundreds of thousands of dollars by not doing the same exact thing and trying to play in a bigger league, right? Now,
well, I mean, it's a double-edged sword because we do know that every individual that goes down that road, it is a slippery slope, and not everyone is cut out for it because what's good for one guy can actually kill another.
Sure.
And I can tell you, the laundry list of athletes that I've come up through this industry that had very good, prosperous careers and a sense of self while they were bodybuilding lost themselves in the drug culture that shows no mercy. And I mean, we've lost guys like Paul DeMeo,
right.
Matt Duvall, Art Atwood, Frank Hillebrand, Greg Kovacs. I mean, there's a laundry list of guys, Skip, that came up at the same time you and I came up that, you know, the sky was the limit. And for some of us, the limit is the sky. And I know you're a disciplined individual, but we don't know how someone's going to react hormonally.
Exactly. And you know, I'm glad you said that because I want to let you know where I come from. I 100% agree. There are so many different factors. You can't say if I just would have taken drugs, you know, I would have been on the Olympia stage. I don't believe that for a moment. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that for a moment. But when you ask me what my mindset was, again, that will set the stage to way back when I started. Because when I started, you know, I won those little AAU shows and I was thinking, well, I'm pretty good, you know, but at the beginning, I didn't rule out drugs. Now, what people need to understand is back in 1989, 1990, when I first started, drugs were not a controlled substance like they are now.
Right.
It was kind of like one of those optional things you can go. It was acceptable to go to your doctor and get a prescription. And it was like no big deal. Like cops did that all the time. It wasn't a big deal. And at that time, before I started training, I worked in a pharmacy and I had no interest in bodybuilding or anything like that. But I would see big guys all the time at our pharmacy, you know, when I worked at the grocery store. I think that people, you know, now 25 years later need to understand that the people who took drugs, it wasn't really that big of a deal like it would be now. Right. So,
yeah. And you know, again, like today, just in present news, you know, gay marriage in all 50 states in the U.S.
Right,
I mean,
right.
when we were coming up, that sounded like an impossibility. You go back to the civil rights movement of the 60s, where blacks weren't even allowed to freaking vote, basically. Things change, and steroids back in the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s were not a class 3 felony type of a drug. It wasn't looked that way. So my whole thing is that, and this is a terminology I use when I do seminars, Skip. People say, well, what is your take on drugs? And it's like, listen, they work. There's so many different drugs for different people for very specific needs and uses that you can't use a steroid and it applies to every athlete. The same way as if three guys go into a bar and they all drink 5 beers and they're all different sizes, shapes, and even ethnicities, you have to take into account that the effect of that alcohol on those three individuals, even though they drink the same brand and the same quantity, will be dramatically different. One guy might be the life of the party. Another guy might pass out and throw up on the floor. And the other guy, the third guy that drank the same alcohol, wants to beat up everybody in the bar. Well, hormones are the same way, functionality-wise, on humans. It's not always going to be the same desired result because one guy looks some away because he took 3 cc's a test. Oh, well, I'm going to take 4 cc's and I'm going to look better than that guy. The next thing you know, the guy's got pimples, he's got gyno, and it doesn't even work. So it is a very slippery slope when you start getting into pharmacology and bodybuilding.
Right. And my tribe are a lot of natural bodybuilders, and they don't understand that. They think it's like the miracle drug, and that's the difference between them and the Mr. Olympia stage. A couple things. Number one, I never had that illusion. And here's the other thing, and people want to know my strategy for success or why I was focused and I was willing to do all that work for whatever rewards. I never learned about anything you're talking about. I didn't need to know. I didn't need to know about the science of steroids because once I made that decision, to me it was just like, why would you put that energy? There's so many other things that you can spend your time learning about. So, you know, you talk about those things. I never even opened my mind. You know, Nick Wright, he's a really good natural bodybuilder, and he's a YouTube star. I interviewed him on my podcast. Good kid, really good kid. He's living his passion. There's a lot of things to admire him. I know that one of his strategies, and he says he likes to learn, even though he doesn't take steroids, he likes to learn everything about him. And, you know, his philosophy is that it kept him well-rounded. Well, my philosophy was just the opposite. If I'm not going to use them, I don't need to know all that, right? And so, you know, what you're saying, I never exposed myself to learn that because once I made the decision, you know, I made that decision. But I never believed, you know, look, I know that I've got a lot of great body parts. You know, I can get really ripped, and I've learned that what I think a lot of natural bodybuilders at that time, because now they're all ripped, right? Now they're all ripped. Now they have to learn how to fill out with muscle fullness. But at that time, being ripped and being natural was something, there wasn't a belief they could do that. And what I learned with my structural limitations, that if I got lean, I'll tell you what, it just showed off my physique so much better. And I would always get the brownie point with the judges because how can you vote against that guy who works so much harder? So I had a lot of combinations that worked for me that were above and beyond, you know, just my body.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I didn't go the route that you did. I chose my destiny, and knock on wood, and thank God I came out healthy and clean, no pun intended. But in 1990, Skip, I won the first ever pro drug tested contest.
Right, right.
In its second year, Mike Ashley was first runner up, and only a week prior, I'd beaten him at the pro Ironman, which did not have testing. What was the impact on you, and what was your? How did you digest that? You know, here's Sean Ray, former national champion, clearly failed the drug test. For me internally, it kind of made me look like the Ben Johnson of bodybuilding. However, you know, 7 months later, I passed the drug test in 1990 at the Olympia, and I got third place. And Mike Ashley chose not to go to the show because he had a bothering knee injury. But a lot of people were disappointed and didn't even believe that Mike Ashley was natural because he did win the Detroit Pro Show, because he did turn professional, and because he was standing there at first runner-up and basically got the victory at the Arnold Classic by default. Nobody really gave Mike Ashley his credit, even though he did pass that drug test and I failed.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So that was when I was probably the most passionate and into bodybuilding. I'd run to the grocery store, get every single magazine, right? I would have, back in the days, they had these big cardboard diaper boxes that we had at the grocery store, right? And they were just filled with magazines. So when that happened and that was going on, I was just the supreme bodybuilding fan. And I'll just tell you, from my point of view, a couple of years of training, all you guys were on such a pedestal. I don't think I really cared about all that. I mean, the assumption was I had limiting beliefs about what could be accomplished drug-free, just like, you know, everybody else starting out. It was just something interesting, I guess, to talk about Mike Ashley being natural or not being natural. It's kind of, ironic. I don't know how seriously I took he was actually drug-free or natural at that time. I just said, hey, whatever. But, it's very hard to believe that.
What about you, though? I mean, people said the same exact
thing. Sure. No, that's why I said it's ironic, right? Like, you know what, though, Sean? I think that I'm being objective.
Yeah.
15 years into training with everything I accomplished, Mike Ashley is way superior to me. I mean, you're a historian. You're a fan. You study the bodies. I mean, am I being too hard on myself? He was 10 notches ahead of me. I mean, at my best. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. No. Mike Ashley was legit. I mean, again, he took second place to me in a non-steroid tested.
Now, what do you mean by legit? What's your definition that?
Well, listen, he was a powerlifter, and he came from that background. And you know, naturally, when you build that foundation,
right.
Those muscles are going to come regardless of what you do. Mike Ashley was a very strong bodybuilder.
Right.
Then when you strip away the fat, you're left with nothing but the muscle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know about training naturally. You obviously.
Yeah, no, and I trained very heavily. I don't know, I'm not comparing myself to Mike Ashley, but, weights that I lifted are on the internet, right? So what you're saying is that, you legitimately feel that he was a drug-free bodybuilder with all your experience.
Well, here's the thing. Like yourself, I really didn't care what the other guys
were doing. Right, right. Right.
That was his claim. I mean, I didn't know whether he was taking steroids or not, but I knew the guys I was competing against were.
Right.
Mike Ashley going into the Ironman and going into the Arnold was not an athlete I was thinking about.
Right.
When I went into the Arnold Classic, I mean, Mike Christian was in that show. I mean, I was competing against 1982 Mr. Olympia Chris Dickerson. I mean, there were much bigger names that were in the show that I had to take into consideration, but I never looked sideways at who I was trying to compete or beat.
Right.
I always focused on Sean Ray, and that held true even against Dorian, Lee Haney, and even Ronnie Coleman and the like. Mike Ashley was just another bodybuilder, but his shtick was, I'm a natural bodybuilder. Well, you know what? Take that ball and run with it. I never had to be faced with those questions.
Right,
when
right.
I failed the test and I gave him back the trophy, I had the trophy shipped back to him. Me and Mike Ashley never really had a conversation until I made the Arnold Classic documentary only a couple of short years ago. And we went deep in that conversation. It wasn't because I didn't like him. He lived in Arizona. I lived in California. He disappeared in the 90s. My career was just taking off when I failed that drug test. And I never crossed paths with Mike except for maybe one or two times. And we had the 25-year anniversary of the Arnold. I saw him on stage, and then I did the documentary, and I had a chance to interview him, and I actually apologized for him because I felt bad that, it was a sloppy drug test to begin with. We got the results back a week after the show was over. Five or six guys failed the test. It totally became a different contest behind closed doors. Mike never did get his just due. He never had dinner with Arnold. He never got recognized at the 1991 Arnold Classic because I won that show.
Uh-huh.
But it would have been saving grace if he had a chance to speak to the crowd and say, hey, last year you guys, I got the trophy from Sean. We could have buried the hatches, but they didn't want to rehash that because the drug test didn't work. It was a miserable flop.
I mean, well, Sean, I'm trying to pin you down and ask you a question that you were trying to pin me down. And I think that there's a bigger story. It's like what I'm getting from you is, you don't know, and you really don't care, right? Is that what you're saying,
absolutely.
Right? And I think that's what I'm saying too. I don't know. I don't know, and I don't care. I got to do my own thing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I felt at the time. Probably just like you, from my world. And I think what we're bringing out here is the mindset of a champion. You know, you mentioned it at the beginning of this podcast, is that I am a student of success in all areas of life. I mean, I have so many different role models. I just pick their brains. If people listen to my series of podcasts, I mean, I'll gloss over the sets and reps because I want to know why this guy became a one percenter, right? And, you know, if someone's listening to this podcast, I mean, you have, you know, Sean Ray going his route. You have me going the other route. And what we're saying is we don't give a shit what he was doing. I mean, we got our own shit to worry about, right? And I think that's the story. I think with my tribe coming up with natural bodybuilders, they're so damn worried about, is this guy a natty, fake natty and everything? It just kind of consumes their brain. And they have all their reasons for it. It is an insult to the sport, and it takes away from this and all that. You know, I guess, but if someone wants to know how I think about it, I just do my thing. I'll tell you this.
You know what? Listen, not to cut you off, but that's exactly the journey of any bodybuilder, drug-free or not. You know, keep your eye on the prize.
Champion drug-free bodybuilders, yeah. I think.
You can't care what the other people are doing, especially if you're trying to beat those guys. I can't build a Sean Ray physique paying attention to the Dorian Yates doctrine, right?
I mean,
what is he taking? What's he eating? How is he? I built my body based on what I thought I needed for my body. And we could beat the whole drug-free, non-drug-free thing into the ground, but you survived in spite of it. You went on to become an author, a motivational speaker. I mean, like you said on the last podcast, you created my first website. I knew nothing about the internet until you created my website with a form, and it became very successful until I signed an exclusive deal with Muscular Development where I could only, you know, appear on their bodybuilding forms.
Right.
I still do. You know, I'm still appearing on their forms. But where did your drive to, okay, you did what you needed to do on stage, but where did your drive to continually stay plugged into this industry?
Yeah.
Where many people, most bodybuilders skip, surprisingly, when they're done bodybuilding, they want nothing to do with it. It didn't treat them well. They felt like they didn't make any money.
Yeah,
they felt
yeah.
like they were used, kind of spit out and used. But you stuck around and you managed to monetize this and continue your passion the same way that I have. Where
yeah.
did that come from?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, when I first started, you know, going back to the decisions, because that was at the beginning. Back in my day, you and Troy Zuccolotta were on ESPN. And I have to tell you, is that I did have this kind of plan that once I got so big or so much developer in so many years, I don't remember. I said, then I would go to the other side. Well, that day never came about. I don't know if you remember who Laura Dayton is. Do you know Laura Dayton?
No.
She was a writer for an early Muscular Development back in the day.
Oh,
and,
yes, I do know. I've
okay.
interviewed yeah.
Yeah, and her and her brother, Mike Dayton, used to run the AAU. And she really took an interest with me right after I won my first contest after 13 months of training. And she really took a special interest in me. You know, she just saw it. She'd been in this industry. And Muscular Development at that time, she got me in a little photo shoot where, you know, I was just 13 months, my color was horrible, whatever. And this was at like the Vallejo Gold's Gym. And as we were going back to the East Bay, Northern California, where I live, we were driving, and she goes, you know, you could really be a pro bodybuilder, right? And I was going, wow, really? You know, I mean, because I idolize you guys. And so I go, and so I was driving, and she's, I, you know, because I was naive at that time, even though I was 28 years old. And I said, would I have to take drugs to do that? And she laughed, right? You know, she goes, yeah. And, you know, I wasn't like opposed to that. You know, that wasn't like, at that time, right? But then the next question, I think this really kind of, you know, solidified where I was going. And I said, hey, do bodybuilders make a lot of money? And then she laughed even harder, right? And then she told me, like, she guesstimated how much drugs would cost. And I said, to me at that time, again, with my being new to bodybuilding just a year and a half, I didn't have role models, right? I was just – actually, I did have one role model. His name is Rich Cunha. He really helped me out. And he and his girlfriend at the time, now wife for all these years, Maria Lopez, they really took me in and we became friends. But Rich had a problem. He had a complication due to his drugs, and that was my first role model. So it was probably just the opposite of some of the other guys, right? And he was, you know, he had some, And he just was honest about it. And this was my first experience, and I was doing well already. You know, so when but what happened is that whatever source, everything, all the doctor's office, whatever way they used to kind of legitimately get people, regular people, steroids, that all people, everybody started cracking down. And it now became this big deal. And so I was just out of it. Again, I was doing well already. So I didn't really feel as though I had to do it. And then I had a real job at that time with real responsibility that I worked a long time to get. You know, back at, you know, it's many years ago, but I was making $75,000 a year working at this grocery store. I worked very hard to get up the ladder. And so, you know, being a bodybuilder for not making any money and then, you know, taking control substance. And I'm a big rules guy. My parents were really strict. It was just too much of a hurdle for me at that time with my upbringing. And I was doing all right. Because, see, at that time, the NPC started the Iron Man Naturally contest. So now you had – so the AAU got me right at the beginning. They were really promoting me, and it was great. And then they started slowing down. And right at – the timing was perfect. You know, John Balick and Iron Man Magazine, they started those NPC Iron Man Naturally contests all around the country. They're not around anymore. But so there was drug-tested NPC shows that fed into the Team Universe. And my timing was perfect because – the Team Universe became drug tested, and that's how they picked the Team USA. So if you were drug free, man, you had all this route. I could get in the magazines like you guys did, or that was the vision. So everything worked out perfectly where I could be rewarded in my being that big fish in that small pond. I remember there was an Iron Man Naturally contest, and I made out this plan. I said, all right, I'm going to write this article. And I remember it was 10 tips on how to make it as a drug free bodybuilder. And do you know, remember Rosemary Hollum, the writer?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Well, she was local, right? And she was, and so I said, I told her, I hired her. I said, I want to write this article and submit it to Iron Man. And Sean, I swear to God, she ripped this article apart probably like 50 times. And I had to rewrite it, rewrite it. But my plan was I was going to win this show, the Iron Man Naturally LA. And I said, wow, John Balick will be there. And Michael Nevue, the guy who films all the, you know, photographs, they'll be there. I'll win their first show. And then I'll introduce myself and I'm going to hand them this article. And then I can write an article. And you know what? Everything happened exactly the way I planned, except for my article still wasn't ready after trying to write it for about 6 months, right? And I did win. I did see John Balick there. And I said, you know, I have this article that I've been writing, and I want to get that to you because I'd like to see it. And so right when I got home, I finished up, and I spent my own money to do a photo shoot, and I had my first article in Iron Man, and then here we go. So you can see how all the stars all lined up at the right time for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I know, and with that being said, Skip, I mean, I know you got to – it's your radio show, and I am a host of the Skip LaCour Bodybuilding Podcast, and I know – I'll let you pitch it to commercial. We'll come back and go a little bit deeper.
Sounds great.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. So, you have your bodybuilding and training efforts going in the right direction. That's awesome. Are you now ready to take your entire life to the next level too? Sure, it takes a lot of focus and discipline to build a great body, but that's not going to automatically translate into an incredible overall life too, unless you have a clear-cut vision for exactly what you want for your life and an effective plan that you really believe in to make it happen. Maybe you've already realized this. Your body has improved dramatically. People compliment you all the time, but you still feel that there's something missing. What's your plan to become more than just a great body and create an amazing, balanced, overall quality of life that you can be proud of and confidently work toward? One-on-one peak performance coaching specialist Skip LaCour will help you channel all that your hard work, discipline, and abilities to become more than just muscles and help you build a life filled with confidence, passion, and purpose. You can have it all. Confidence in every social situation, wealth, opportunity, freedom,
love, and connection, along with your impressive physical body and amazing health. When you know the strategies to put it all together and execute them on a continual basis, go to SkipLacourCoaching.com and see the different one-on-one life coaching plans Skip LaCour has to help you. Set up a free coaching session to see if this exclusive next-level one-on-one coaching program is right for you by sending Skip an email at Skip@SkipLacourCoaching.com.
We're back. This is Sean Ray, your guest host on the Skip LaCour Bodybuilding Podcast. We're getting into the mindset of Skip LaCour, one of bodybuilding's best, natural, I should say, that's ever been able to do it, and do it with success and longevity. Skip, I was just kind of asking you, you said something very poignant, is that you know, you had a job, and making $75,000 working at a grocery store is a full-time job, right, and probably a lot of hard work. I never did get into the bodybuilding the way I was as a football player. When I played football, I knew the coaches. I knew the colleges that the pros came from. I knew the salaries that they made. I knew everything there was to know about football, thinking that one day I'd wind up in the NFL.
Right,
when I got into bodybuilding, I learned about everything there was to learn about bodybuilding. However, the one thing that I'd never looked into was what these guys were making financially across the board. It just never resonated with me in 1983 that I think Samir Banu might have gotten $25,000 for winning the Mr. Olympia.
Right.
I just didn't get into bodybuilding to make money. I was so hung up on one day seeing my face on a magazine cover or having my poster in a gym or joining that elite fraternity of professional bodybuilders and maybe one day being a Mr. Olympia. And the irony of that is that when I retired in 2001, I believe at the time there had only been 13 Mr. Olympia winners, or maybe 10. I retired in 01. So after me, there was obviously Ronnie Coleman was winning. Then there was Dexter Jackson, Jay Cutler, and Phil Heath. There's only three more Mr. Olympia winners since I retired. So I think there was like 10 prior to me getting there. I wanted to be one of those guys. And I never looked at this on a monetary sense. You can't get into bodybuilding to make money. It just is not going to mix. The money came from diversification, from education and branding and marketing and learning the business side of bodybuilding, which you obviously are a very successful student of. But many bodybuilders don't look at it that way. They right. are like a lot of boxers. They come in, they lift weights, and now they turn everything over to their trainer, to their manager. And when their careers are over, they don't know how to keep it going the way that you and I have. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, look, you get what you take risk and you go for in this world, all right? And history is kind to you and all the others who totally went for it. I mean, look, I know that people respect what I do, but in the grand scheme, if I'm going to get into this whole bodybuilding thing, I didn't really get into it all in. You know, and, you know, I'll tell you, my natural bodybuilding brother, sometimes I wonder, you know, I did so well in natural bodybuilding, if they really considered me a brother, right? I would get so many hateful emails and things like that. But I was kind of in the middle because I didn't get to experience your type of success either. I kind of somehow sometimes got shoved in the middle. But, you know, Peter McGough wrote a great article and he posted it on Muscular Development. And it was about natural bodybuilding. And one thing he said is that, you know what, natural bodybuilders aren't all in. And it was something like that. Do you happen to remember that article?
I don't.
Okay. And, you know, he's right. He's right. I mean, my mentality and a lot of natural bodybuilders, we want to have this balanced life. We want to get in, but not all in. You know, yeah. And I'll tell you, I got in more than other natural bodies, but I didn't get in as much as, you know, the real guys who are real legends, Olympia stage. I mean, real legacy. But I'll tell you, I would win the trophy. I'd win the championship. And I quit my job. I talked about that job and that security. I quit it to go for my dreams. I was hustling. I had a small little contract with a supplement company. I'd bounce around to a couple companies. I'd be writing articles. I'd be on the internet, selling, information, my knowledge, connection, newsletters, all those type of things. Hustle, hustle, hustle.
Right. But
the truth of the matter is I was not all into it. You know, I took a I took a conservative balance, what my life was a balanced life approach. And you, when you take that approach, you don't get the gold prize. And I didn't get it because I wasn't all in. But the thing about it with natural bodybuilders, I was more all in than they were. I mean, yeah. They come in, you know, their show, you know, maybe kind of rip, you know, whatever. And I'll tell you, Sean, I'd get in discussions, whether it's interviews or whatever it is, and they would say, well, you know what? I have my education. I have my family. I have this normal job. I mean, they weren't, you know, and that's fine, but I hope they realize when you don't go all in, and whether it's your moral conviction, I can certainly identify with all that, but if you're in bodybuilding and you're not getting everything you want, go do something else, right?
You know what you sound like? You sound like you're describing Cedric McMillan. Here's a guy that Lee Haney said that is the next coming of him. And Lee Haney only won 8 Sandow trophies before he was 31 years old.
Uh-huh.
So it's got to be one of the biggest compliments when Cedric wins the national title and Lee Haney says, this is the next Lee Haney. And he goes on, he wins the show out in Germany, and he pretty much disappears off the landscape. He gets second place at the Arnold Classic this year, but doesn't go on to the Arnold Classic in Australia, but he goes there as a guest to sign autographs instead of compete. He doesn't go into shows that he could actually win and qualify to go to the Mr. Olympia, and it's because he has said, and he's on record, I work for the U.S. government. I have a family. I have a wife and kids. Like, right. I have other things to do. And we look at him with envy because of his potential, and then we realize he's not all in.
Yeah.
What would we do if we could be Cedric McMillan for 1 year with that body? We would become Mr. Olympia if we were all in, but for whatever reason, his mindset, he has a plan B, he has a safety net, and so he's not all in. And so even today as we talk, he's not qualified for the Mr. Olympia, but he's the one guy, I believe, that could, if he was all in, take the title from Phil Heath, and so does Lee Haney believe that, but the only one that doesn't believe it or see it is Cedric.
Yeah, you know, you make some good points, and I really don't know his story. I'm like you, I'm a fan, and I see his potential. And you know what, coincidentally or not coincidentally, the majority of his early career, Cedric was, you know, a natural bodybuilder going that route, doing all that work to be a natural bodybuilder. And see, I don't know. I would love to climb inside his mind and break it down, you know, the way I like to do it. And, you know, he's has his family, his tribe. There's probably people who think that's the best way to go about it, and really throwing caution into the wind. If they, again, it's all a person's rules and values, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, how much safety and security versus legendary status. I mean, everybody's got their own formula in their own head, and they got to play by their own rules in life. And as long as they're happy with it, I mean, that's all that matters. You know
what
I mean?
Right. That is all that matters, because it's every athlete's journey is a very individual one. But let me just toss this at you.
Okay.
Can $250,000 and the title of Mr. Olympia in the year 2015 change the economy of your life and the body of work that you've done all your life forever? I mean, if Cedric was all in and said, okay, family, friends, whatever, give me this year to do what I got to do as a bodybuilder and let me just go for it. Don't you think that that one title, that one victory could change his entire family's life? It could change his life. He doesn't lose his job, but it's frustrating to see the potential. It's like, you know, watching a guy with all this talent never really realize. It was like watching Matt Mendenhall getting second in 1982 to Lee Haney at the Nationals. Lee Haney goes on to become the, you know, winningest bodybuilder and Mr. Olympia 8 times, and Matt Mendenhall never even got his pro card. It's like he got a sniff and it never was realized. The frustration of that to watch.
Yeah. No, you have some great questions, and I think I come from a unique perspective. I think I can add some insight to this, and this is especially 12 years after I've retired from competitive bodybuilding. First of all, you know, you talk about money, and one thing I've learned as I coach men all over the world, all different ages, and I don't coach people on bodybuilding, you know, sets and reps. There's plenty of young guys who are yahoos into that can do that. You know, I help you know, men get their life organized, their priorities to go for what they really want, and then reverse engineer their life to step up with the skill set, mindset they need to, I mean, really go for what they really want in life, right? And one thing, subject that comes up is money. Money is a very, very emotional subject that means so many different things to different people. What money means to one person does not mean the same thing to another person. Right. And I'll use this, you know, analogy, because a lot of people find the subject of money fascinating. They want money, but they push it away because they don't understand that money is just an energy. It's just emotion, right? And I'll give you an example. So, you know, I work hard. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning so I can be uninterrupted. I got two babies under the age of two. My wife's a stay-at-home mom, and I'm working all day, but I get to do what I love to do over the internet, do these type of things, right? Coach men, really, to live my passion. But, you know, I invest a lot of time, and I have to be in this position, right? And so I'll go downstairs, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 times a day, just eat, and I just want regular food, right? I'm not a foodie. I don't really care. Just, you know, my wife has some chicken breast cut up and some rice and some vegetables. That's all I need. And I'm back to work doing what I love to do. Well, sometimes what she does is she sautés some mushrooms. And I love mushrooms, right? And not fancy schmancy mushrooms, just mushrooms in one of those brown cartons. I don't know how much they cost, 99 cents, right? Or whatever. And I don't ask her for mushrooms. She just throws in a little into the mix. And I like to get fun and playful around the kids. Like, woohoo, mushrooms. Oh, I love mushrooms, you know. And my wife is such a great supportive wife. She goes, you know, if you really like mushrooms, what type of mushrooms do you like? Right? Because, you know, I can do like, and I said, well, I don't know. Well, and she kind of mentioned a couple. I said, well, what's the difference? And she said to me, well, this type of mushroom, it absorbs the flavor of the food that you're eating at the time. And I kind of stop, you know, because I always like to break things apart, and I go, wait a second. And I kind of heard that concept. I'm not into the food channels, but she'll have those on. And I've heard that concept of whatever food absorbs the flavor. And I stopped her and I said, well, I like the taste of mushrooms. If I wanted more chicken and rice, I'd just get more chicken and rice. And the reason why I bring about that analogy is because what I've learned that whatever people grew up with, if money was scarce, if they missed out on love and connection because their parents were always hustling in a negative way, they have all these negative emotions tied to money. And so a lot of them come over here to bodybuilding and perform their art. And it's just, they're avoiding the emotion that they saw. Now, you know, I have one client, and he's 26 years old. He makes $100,000 a month. Well, the emotion that he ties to money is his dad used to flip houses, and he used to come home with cash. And it would get his 8-year-old son, and they'd throw it up in the air and dance in it, and it was like this bonding thing. They had their little saying, cash is king or whatever, right? And he really loved it. He loves his dad. He loved his dad. His dad took care of his mom. So he had so many positive emotions tied to money, right? So if he says money, it'll have a neurological one reaction to him in a positive way versus a lot of other people who struggle with money. It's just whatever emotion that they absorb growing up, right? So when you say that, you know, would that $250,000 prize, what would that do for him? Well, it really depends on how he views money, right?
Absolutely. You're right. You know what? Because you cannot get into this sport for the love of money.
Right.
If money is a byproduct of your passion and you're able to do both, that's great. But money may not be his priority. Maybe it's, listen, I moonlight.
Right.
You know, like Deion Sanders, like, I'm playing in the NFL, I'm playing football, or baseball, and Bo Jackson were able to do both, but, you know, they had other interests. I mean, Deion became a rapper and a music guy and a television personality. We cannot get into the mindset, like you said, of every athlete when they're in the throes of it. But when we sit as fans and watch, it's very hard not to be envious of someone with so much potential and talent of the things that they could do. If I was that guy,
well,
I always said,
yeah,
if I was Dorian Yates, I would only need to win one Mr. Olympia to become more famous than him in his six Mr. Olympias because I would take the title and I would do A, C, X, Y, and Z. But, you know, that's the fan saying, if I were that person.
No, it is. And you know what? I was asked that question. So my money mindset, especially with family and responsibility, as I've grown and evolved as a man, my views are money, how I've changed that emotion attached to money, right? I was more of an artist back then. I mean, I hustled maybe more than other guys, but it's nothing like now. Nothing like you've been doing your whole career, right? And I talked to Rich Gasparri, and, you know, I'm breaking down that money mindset that he has that I don't even know if you guys really realize, because that's just the way you've been since you guys were young.
Right.
But I've grown as a man. I mean, my whole Manformation program, which if you go to manformation.com, it's a trademark program. It's about how to evolve into the man you really want to be. It's a leadership and confidence course. You guys should check that out at manformation.com. I even give away a free 11-hour seminar that takes them through a step-by-step process. If you go to manformation.com/free, I hope that I've got a lot of new visitors, you know, in listening to this because of you, Sean, and because it'll be posted on Muscular Development, right? So you guys check it out. You know, you get to maybe, if you don't know who I am from my bodybuilding career, at least you'll be introduced to that, maybe more than sets and reps. And, you know, if you follow me as a bodybuilder and whatever you thought of me, you'll see where I'm at right now. So just check that out, manformation.com, and go to manformation.com/free. But what I'm saying, I've evolved, right? And I was more of that artist back then. Guys would ask me all the time, and I would see it on message boards or whatever. He goes, you know what? That Skip LaCour, he's such a liar and this and that. He's just lying because he makes money by saying he's drug-free and sponsorships and all that. You know, that's their perception of what they think's going on. Actually, I can see now how I cost myself probably the potential to make a lot of money. And the other thing, too, is that that's what he believes I could have. And they'll say, why doesn't he just take drugs and win Mr. Olympia? Right. And the reason why, because I know that you don't just take drugs and become Mr. Olympia, right?
Right.
Because then, you know, the thing is, what people need to understand is that it's this beautiful sculpture that you either have or you don't have. And everybody isn't perfect, right? But, you know, like with me, I mean, I'll tell you, you know, Sean, I don't know how much you're into the natural bodybuilding culture, but, you know, that's for 25 years. I know their mindset. I know the way they think. And when someone gets good, I mean, they just get ripped. And, you know, with cameras now, the high definition, hell, a guy can just look halfway decent and he gets, oh, he's on drugs, he's a fake natty. I mean, they get a lot of abuse. And I mean, they're not even close to the development that I was, right? But one thing that I never do is I never, what they'll like, because the pressure. Because one thing you mentioned on another podcast, which is so true, many of us, not all of us, many of us get into this because we want to be liked. You know, we found our little place. And when you do this and you love it and you feel like you're being liked and special and unique, and then you get hammered for being natural or saying you're natural, it kind of goes against why you were doing this in the first place. And a lot of natural bodybuilders, what they do is say, I'm just a twink. I'm not that big. And they kind of show all their weak body parts and they want to show themselves or talk about themselves in the less flattering light to prove their natural status. Well, I took a stand a long time ago. You want to think I'm amazing? You want to think I'm Arnold's? Like, the one thing they'll say is his stats are the same as Arnold's were back in the day. I mean, that is so not true. But, hey, you want to think I'm that great? That's fine. You know what I mean? But I never believed because, you know, certain things, again, so I'll tell you my weak points is, you know, legs don't match the upper body. I'm not wide. I don't have this wide V taper. My front relaxed pose, the first thing they see, and my front bubble bicep is by far my worst pose, right? You never see pictures of me on the internet, and that's a reason I really control how I'm viewed on the internet, right? Well, I don't care how many drugs I take, it's just going to be an exaggerated version of those flaws, right?
Let me tell you something about your observation. You're absolutely right. This is an industry built upon flaws. People come into it because they're too fat, too skinny, low self-esteem, they have bigorexia. I mean, they come in with all kind of self-image issues, the same way a lot of high-fashion models are. They see themselves as fat even when they're anorexic. And even when you're in moments of victory and you're getting these compliments, you're still saying, yeah, but you know what? I'm a little bit narrow compared to Gary Stridham. Yeah, I could have bigger deltoids compared to Kevin Lavrone. I wish my legs were a little bit bigger. And even with measures of success, and you get to the top, you always go back in the gym and you hear those compliments, but you can only really remember the things that aren't right with your body. I mean, when you become complacent with your body being ideal, you stop making progress. So the attraction to this sport is that it's just a never-ending journey of self-exploration and trying to be better, not only from the inside out, but also from the outside in, because what people see on the outside is not what we see on the inside when we look in the mirror at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that's a great observation, and I'll even put less emphasis on the body, even though this seems like such a physical culture. And your observations are so correct. I mean, what I've seen, all kinds of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, feeling picked on, left out, and it really happens younger in life. So a lot of times people talk about a divorce or something earlier in life, but they have trust issues, abandonment issues, all those kind of things. And, you know, one thing is I'm writing a book right now. It's called It's a Matter of Trust, Confessions of a Recovering Bodybuilder. And you guys can go to this website where I have some excerpts. It's a matter of trust.com. It's a matter of trust.com. And I talk about all these things that I had growing up. And, you know, I felt my body was fine when I didn't look at superheroes or cartoons and wish I was like them. I wasn't a 98-pound weakling. So during my journey, I thought I was like, you know, mentally and emotionally sound. I'm just doing it. For me, it was because, like, my family unit as a kid kind of broke up in 16, 17, 18, and I couldn't concentrate. You know, basketball, I was going to go to college, play basketball. I would have major league scouts for baseball looking at, but my head was a mess, and I was like working at that time. And so if you would have asked me while I was in the throngs, well, why am I so driven to become this bodybuilder? I would have told you, well, at 27 years old, it's my second chance to be this professional athlete or however you look at that, and nothing can get in my way. Not the family can't distract me or problems at home, and I could just get to work. Now, that's what I would have told you why I became so good at what I did. Looking back now, man, I had massive trust issues, intimacy issues. And for me, it was connecting with nobodies. I mean, not nobodies, or people who just barely knew me. That was so much more comfortable. Thousands of them around the world who would, you know, buy 63 countries would buy my DVDs and books or send me emails, right? How great I was. It was just little, it would fill my soul. So I didn't, that girlfriend that I would have and the other one, I mean, Sean, you would see me, right? Different girlfriend every single year, right?
I mean, you had to validate what you were doing by, you know, like I went through the same thing with Flex and Paul Dillette. We used to get a different car every 6 months to a year just to show that we were successful. And that's us in our ignorance and our youth that, look, you know, you guys thought we were just lifting weights, but look, we're able to make money and look at my car. This is proof. Oh, you know what? We have a Porsche this year. I'm going to have a BMW next year. Flex would go out and get this car. And I had to go get that car. And ultimately the stakes got so high. It was like Ferraris to Lamborghini.
Right, right.
I mean, this was like measuring penis sizes.
Right, right,
competition
right.
Competition with each other. But, you know, we validated our success based on outward appearance because we knew that we had the best physiques in the world, but we had to show you we were successful with what kind of automobile we drove because that's what you do here in California.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, for me, I couldn't, you know, I would always date nice girls, but once it got so close, now, again, I wasn't conscious of this. I would do everything to create obstacles for them to jump over, and all the healthy girls would say, hey, you're a cool guy, nice guy, but, you know, I want closeness and intimacy. I didn't get all this. And when I had these fans all around the world who were at a real arm's length, right, I'd come into some town and they'd tell me how great I was and I could just go home or on the internet. And at the same time, if someone said, oh, you're not drug free or whatever they would say, I mean, that can hurt me. Who are they? Right. So it kind of put me in a no lose situation. I got little nibbles of intimacy because I couldn't get over those issues at the time and really get to the point where I'm now, where I have a great marriage, I'm committed and loving, and I've got a great wife and family. It took me a lot later in life to do this. And one thing that, you know, my fans have seen, they've seen me as this dedicated bodybuilder, make my man formation. And I'll tell you, a lot of the people who come to me for life coaching, I hate that term life coaching, but I guess that's what it is they want to make it to the other side like I did. They are into the structure of bodybuilding, the distraction of bodybuilding, the control. You don't have to depend on people if you just eat and train, eat and train, eat and train. And then people start complimenting you. Oh, your physique is amazing. And I'll tell you, once you create a disempowering habit that you think is so great, like cutting everybody off and just training and eating and looking good, I don't care how crappy your life is or how crappy your bank account is, when people tell you you look so great and you're one in a million, now you're in a shitty position. Because now you get rewarded for having a suck life. And if you start, and I know guys listening to this, right? I know you can identify. When the outside world thinks you're amazing, awesome, one in a million, and you look this way, and then you can hide how you feel in your heart, lonely, not trusting, pushing away intimacy, you're not taking care of your bank account or your future, but you can hide that. But on the outside, people think you're amazing. That's a tough position because it's hard to break out of. You have to have this new mindset, and you have to give up what you're so great at, that emphasis. And be not so good at that, not so much, and to go in this no man's land territory where you haven't completely recovered to, like I said, make your man formation and have the quality of life that you want, that money, that connection, that business, and you gave up that body. It's a crappy place to be. And Sean, I don't know how much you look at the mindset of our culture, but you know a lot of older guys, man, they're posting pictures of them 20 years ago. They have not evolved past when they were that champion bodybuilder in life. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, you're right. And you know what? The flip side is, look, I mean, I'm one of those guys now, and I...
Well, you know what? Go ahead, but I'm going to correct you. I'll tell you why I think that you're different.
Okay, real quick. Well, when you say older guys, I'm 14 years retired, which is two more than you. But at the same time, being very relevant to the sport and traveling around the world,
yes.
I also realized that if you didn't buy the magazines, you missed it. And so we're fortunate now through the internet and through having old school pictures to be able to share it, not with just the guys we know in our neighborhood or in our state, but with the entire world. So what I do when I go back into my archives and I start posting up old pictures of what I used to look
right,
like.
Right, right, right.
I know the feedback I got when it was coming out in real time. When people took the time out to write a letter and tell me how important this photo looked or how important it made them feel to see this inspiration. So I throw those pictures out there to educate the new school, to show the new school what old school used to look like, and not to be relevant, but to show the differences. Whereas you're right, a lot of guys that didn't take the time to fully develop who they were are living in the past, and they're stuck on the old pictures, and that's who they are today.
Right, right.
Without monetary compensation, without the relationships that you talked about, I did what you did. I isolated myself while I was in the throes of my professional bodybuilding career by choice. I had healthy relationships, healthy friendships, but I didn't have healthy intimate relationships because I was in love with bodybuilding. I didn't want to be in love with a person because it would take my eye off the prize. When I got ready for the Mr. Olympia, whoever I was seeing was put on timeout or they were discarded.
Yeah.
I did not want them to get into my emotional vault.
Looking at your situation, again, with the perspective I have, you were in a lot more of a controlled situation than I was because you made a conscious decision. Right. I can't – that's how my story ended up the way that yours did.
Yeah.
But I was out of control. It wasn't so much of a planned thing. It just happened that way. And let me tell you why you're different. And look, I'm the same way. I'm doing this whole platform makeover. And I'll tell you, it's very important to me. I really respect everything I accomplished in the past. I mean, I don't want to dismiss it. But I'll tell you, I mean, I got a lot of life to live. I want to believe, and I'm willing to work hard every single day to be known what I'm doing now and in the future. What I have to contribute to this world, it's going to be so much more of an impact than what I did in the past. My best days are behind me, and I have that mindset, and I will work hard to reinvent myself, reevaluate, find a way to give back. Because I never want to think my best days were behind me. And you're living that same life. I'm the same way, though, right? Me with my clothes on, me doing all my videos and things like that. And I'll throw a picture from 12 years ago, and I'll tell you, it'll get like 25 times the likes, right? And then, you know, people who really didn't even understand that I was a bodybuilder, they're only like 20 years old. It does give them it gives me a certain amount of respect, right? And they're paying more attention when I teach them, you know, motivational advice, right? And Rich Gasparri, you know, we were just talking before, you know, people respect him for his supplement line and his business acumen and how he's giving back and how he's a mentor to these bodybuilders. And then they find out, hey, you used to be a bodybuilder. See, to me, that's cool. That's cool is that he's putting in his work to be known for today. And I see what you're doing. You know, you're finding ways to continue to give back. Your shows, you're constantly promoting, constantly traveling. You know, you're finding other ways to give back through interviewing and bringing out the highlight. We talked on your podcast how you give advice and you mentor these young guys so they can make more out of it too. See, to me, that what you're talking about isn't what I'm talking about. And I don't want to mention some of the bodybuilders. But, you know, if there were a former, let's just say, I don't know, Mr. Olympia or Mr. Universe or this or that, and you have no freaking clue, you see their Facebook page or social media and all, and you wonder, are they married? What do they do for a living now? I mean, don't you wonder what these older champions are doing for a living and if they're happy or...
Well, you bring me to a place where we're going to find out this Saturday and Sunday at the Santa Clara San Jose Pro, where I'll be promoting the Legends workshop and seminar on Saturday, what you're a part of, along with Hall of Famers Rich Gasparri, Lee Haney, Mike Christian, Chris Cormier, Flex Wheeler. We'll be doing a workshop on training where you can actually get up close and personal and watch us lift weights old school style and answer some questions, take some paparazzi pictures for social media and build some memories. Also, I'll have some t-shirts available. Then on Sunday, we're going to...
Hey, Sean, one quick question. Are you going to be taking off your clothes and lifting weights, or are you going to be instructing?
No, I'm going to be I'll be in workout attire, but there's nothing to see, Skip.
It's all right. Not, well,
it's going to be an instructional training seminar. All right. Listen, this isn't like, you bring back Deion Sanders. And
right, right, okay.
I mean, if they're going to throw the football around on a football field, we're not going to see anybody run for 100 yards.
Okay.
But, you know.
I was getting a little nervous about that, even though I'm in good shape. I don't want to go toe to toe.
I haven't had a chance to train. You know, I was in Kuwait. I was in Brazil, trapped my butt off. But I still know the mechanics. I can still answer questions. We can still do the how-to and the what-fors and answer those questions. And people have a chance up close and personal to get some paparazzi pictures. But then again, on Sunday, we'll have the Q&A, which you're going to help me moderate.
Right.
We're going to go a little bit deeper into the mindset and find out what these athletes and champions have been up to. Remember, Lee Haney retired way back in 1991 when he was confronted with the shadow Dorian Yates out there in Orlando, Florida, on my birthday, I might add. I think I was turning 25 that weekend. Uh-huh. And we can find out what life in retirement for Lee Haney is, and Gasparri reinventing himself as a supplement owner, and of course, Flex Wheeler from the brink of disaster in 1994 where he crashed his Mercedes and came back to win another Arnold Classic championship and find his way to the Hall of Fame. Chris Cormier, one of the winningest bodybuilders of his time, who never did win that Arnold Classic, a six-time first runner-up at that Arnold. We'll find out what defeat for him has turned into. He's now one of the more notorious trainers. And, of course, Mike Christian. I mean, this guy disappeared from the landscape. He had a good run and battled with Gasparri and Lee Haney. Find out what he's up to. I know he's living now in Texas with his daughter, and he's also thrown his hat into the arena of personal training. And, of course, you, Skip, that seminar is going to be chock full of information and wisdom, and I'm looking forward to it this weekend at the Santa Clara Convention Center. And I'm going to leave you with the final word, Skip. I mean, you're a treasure trove of information, motivation, and, again, it's funny how the tables turn where you saw me in the bathroom and trying to and then, make my website and watch my career turn into what it's turned into. And now you're a radio host and author, and you're part of the Legends Seminar. And you've inspired me on so many different different levels that I haven't even had. We need another hour to go into that. But now you're inspiring thousands, if not millions, through your work because of the global reach of your podcast and your books and stuff like that. Tell the fans what they have to look forward to.
Yeah, no, a couple things that you talked about. Sean Ray Productions commissioned me to talk to all these legends. So part of this series of podcasts, there is I posted one on muscular development. There's another one with Sean. Okay. But I did a podcast so you can learn about the mindset. And I'll tell you, the mindset these legends have, and when you listen to these podcasts, because I know, we have this global reach and I want you guys to come out to Santa Clara, right? But I know that the majority of you won't. So we're going to take some video. We're going to get some audio. We're going to do whatever we can to bring the experience to you around the world. And when you go to legendsseminar.com, we're going to have that put together for you, right? Part of a Sean Ray production. But there's a podcast with Lee Haney, Rich Gasparri, Chris Kramer, Flex Wheeler. There's another one of Sean Ray. Now there's this one of me. And we'll see if I can get one with Mike Christian to round it all out. So you can really hear the backstory and the questions that I asked, very similar to what we talked about here. So you'll really get a sense of what they're doing. And I'll tell you, these guys are the elite. They're just not legends with their bodies. You're going to find out that when you listen to these podcasts, they're legends with their minds. Each one of these legends, and now that I've completed them all, were all in. And I'm talking with their heart, soul, their passion, and still going to this day, the history that they're in it. They lived and breathed this. That's why they're legends. And all of them are hustlers, giving back, finding a way to be irrelevant, continue to make their living from their bodies in indirect ways, even when it's 10, 15, 20 years later. So you want to listen to all these podcasts. As far as I'm really excited because I kind of tucked away from the bodybuilding world, and I wasn't that big of a fish in the big pond anyway. I had my really good, loyal tribe, my one cult following. So, hopefully this being up on muscular development and things like that, you guys can, hey, what's this guy? What's he been up to? Bodybuilding and training, skiplacour.com. What I'm most proud of are my websites, manformation.com, M-A-N-F-O-R-M-A-T-I-O-N, manformation.com, confidence and leadership strategies that, maybe I touched a nerve. Maybe you're like me and you maybe didn't realize why you love bodybuilding so much, and maybe you're having some challenges in the rest of your life. Maybe you want to make it over to the other side of love, connection, happiness, business, and all the things that, I have to work my way through. I want to help you there, right? So manformation.com. Check out my book excerpts. I wonder how many of you can relate to my story, how much it's like you. And forget about drugs, no drugs, why we're attracted to bodybuilding. Go to the website, itsamatteroftrust.com. Itsamatteroftrust.com. It's a book that I'm really finishing up along with my other projects that it's called It's a Matter of Trust, Confessions of a Recovering Bodybuilder. I climb in my mind and I'm transparent about the challenges that I went through and how bodybuilding was my escape and my distraction. And then once you guys loved what I did, how it really put me in a position where I didn't want to move anywhere. And that's why I can kind of see it in some of the, the older stars, bodybuilding stars that I talked about. And I want to help you get over to the other side, right? If you want to know what I do, this one-on-one coaching that I really spend up to like 5 hours a day, like 7 days a week, really getting intense, changing men's lives, you can get a glimpse of that at skiplacourcoaching.com. skiplacourcoaching.com. And when you go to these sites, I have all these ways for you to opt in for your email address, so you can I'm always pumping out information that I know can help you. And I really specialize in men, and not like I can't help women, but guys, we have our own language and our own experience. And one thing I learned from marketing is that you just focus on your tribe and you speak their language, and then that's how you create a massive following. So though I can help anybody, right? Ladies, you can benefit from manformation.com. But you'll see all the languages geared to that. I tell you, Sean, I appreciate you taking the time to give me a chance to talk about myself. I don't really do that on my websites. I'm trying to do what I can to help other people. And then when I'm interviewing you guys,
just answering the questions.
Just answering
the questions is helping people.
Yeah.
I do know that following this weekend, if you did get with Mike Christian after the event, that would probably be a good podcast that I would be interested in listening to. Mike's been unplugged for quite some time, so I'd like to hear what he takes in this weekend from being reunited, because there were some epic battles. Mike won the national title in 1984. I was graduating high school. Lee Haney won his first Mr. Olympia in 1984. I was graduating high school. So plugging Mike back in, and I'm very fortunate I had a taste of that. I had a taste of three different decades in the 80s, the 90s, and then obviously the new millennium. But watching Mike this weekend and seeing him plugged in with old guys like Haney and Gaspari and, of course, Flex and Chris. And then when he comes in, I want to hear what he has to say about his perception of how the fans receive him, because I was with him in Texas.
Yeah.
Very few fans recognize Mike.
Yeah.
I mean, old school people did, but you actually had fans come up and say, can you take a picture of me? And
I did. I saw that video interview that you did on Muscular Development where you mentioned that. Yeah.
Turn around and someone wants us to take a picture of a physique guy. Mike's kind of, he's not used to that, but I want to find out what his take is on what he sees in today's economy of bodybuilding and how it's evolved, but also what it feels like to be reunited with these guys through these types of platforms. And I've already got inquiries skipped to do something over in Florida with the guys over there. And this would be something that'd be nice to take on the road. Reunite these guys. Add Lee Labrada. Let's bring in Kevin Lavroni.
Oh, yeah.
And, give these guys a platform to educate the new school from where we came back in the day. So I'm looking forward to this weekend. And I love listening to your podcast. You're doing a great job. Keep up the great work. And your body of work speaks for itself. That's why you're part of this Legends Weekend. And we look forward to having you this weekend.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate the you taking the time to interview me, Sean.
Right on, man. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, guys. So, thank you for listening once again to this Skip LaCour Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast and my guest host, Sean Ray. I am Skip LaCour. Hey, train hard and think big.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. Are you interested in one-on-one coaching with Skip LaCour, but you aren't quite sure it's a good fit for you? That's totally understandable. Unless you've had one-on-one coaching in the past or have talked to someone in depth who's had a great experience with coaching, it can be a real challenge to appreciate its full power and recognize the positive impact it will have on your life. You can get all of your questions about coaching answered by talking to Skip LaCour directly on the phone. Schedule a free 15-minute personal phone call and talk to Skip LaCour directly about your current situation, the goals you want to achieve, and the challenges you believe are standing in your way. Skip works exclusively with men who are the most committed to their success. He'll gladly take the time to explain all of the benefits of his one-on-one coaching programs and determine if the two of you would be a good match moving forward into such a close, consistent, and intense working relationship. Schedule your free 15-minute personal phone call and talk to Skip LaCour about one-on-one coaching right now by going to www.skiplacourcoaching.com/talk. Once again, that website address to schedule your free 15-minute personal phone call and talk to Skip LaCour about one-on-one coaching is www.skiplacourcoaching.com/talk.